In its early days, before Isle Royale became a national park in 1940, the island was home to loggers, miners, and fishermen. Most were Scandinavian immigrants. However, there are people whose ties to the island go much farther back, and their story is often overlooked. In this edition of Moments in Time, we look at the story of these people and their connection to the island. They had a different set of uses for the land and a different name for it.
Isle Royale, or Minong, or Manaduminis is also another word that I've heard. Minong means like a good place. Manaduminis means like Spirit Island.
That's Al Hunter, an Anishinaabe writer who lives at the Rainy River First Nations in Western Ontario. The Anishinaabe or Ojibwe people are said to have been the first to inhabit the island, long before Europeans ever landed in America.
People have been there and have gone there for at least 10,000 years. And part of the reason that people may not be aware of or know about all of this, and I'm speaking in general terms, is that oral history was sometimes purposely put aside. So the people who lived here for centuries and centuries prior to European contact are, it's like they didn't exist. It's like they didn't contribute anything worthwhile recording or other people knowing about. So when we apply this to a place like Minong, Manaduminis, Isle Royale, and in the present day, people know it as Isle Royale, and it's a national park. When people go there, they might learn a little kernel or a little nugget of what went on there prior to European settlement. And all people will see is a tool or an artifact, and maybe some cursory mention of the Aboriginal peoples who were there.
Tim Cochran is superintendent of the Grand Portage National Monument, and he's done extensive research on the Ojibwe connection to the island.
Isle Royale's very important to North Shore Ojibwe. It was a place that served all kinds of purposes, so it's not just one tour. Plenty of people were born there. There's quite a number that died there. For some people, it was a traditional sugar bush that they would go to. For many years, when moose were scarce and Isle Royale still had numbers of caribou, it was an important meat source. But the really important thing at Isle Royale through time, the Lake Superior Ojibwe are maritime fish people. So the fact that there's siskuits that were catchable in Siskuit Bay, it's a lake trout that people don't like to catch anymore. That the fishery resources are so superlative at Isle Royale certainly was the primary draw for Ojibwe people. Another part of it, Isle Royale figures in their religious beliefs, religious traditions, storytelling. So it's for everything that from a mundane side to a spiritual side. So its importance runs that gamut from one end to the other.
However, with the arrival of European settlement on the island in the mid to late 1800s, the Ojibwe presence on Isle Royale began its decline. While Ojibwe used the land for hunting, fishing, and spiritual reasons, they also mined copper.
What's more common is that in early Isle Royale history, that Ojibwe from here worked actually in copper mines, and they worked as deckhands. Remember, they're maritime people, so they've been around the water. But as more and more whites came basically those jobs were taken by other people, and that separation by 1900 was pretty complete. So they were the miners, they were the woodcutters, but by the mining in the 1870s and 1890s, there were almost no Ojibwe working there. They had been supplanted by a white workforce.
Although the arrival of Europeans on the island contributed greatly to the decline of Ojibwe and Isle Royal, it was the 1842 Treaty of La Pointe that sealed their fate. Land on the Arrowhead of Minnesota was ceded to the U.S. government in exchange for reservation lands in Wisconsin, Michigan, and other parts of Minnesota.
Certainly, the Ojibwe were evicted from Isle Royal in a harsher tone and a harsher light than what we're talking about today. I mean, the base agreement in which the North Shore Ojibwe were removed from Isle Royal, they weren't even invited to those terms in La Pointe in 1842. So they lost their property, if you want to call it that, without even being there.
Today, the National Park Service is working on a plan on how to manage the cultural and historical connections of people in the park. In the past, the connections of Native people have not been considered, but there is hope that this time, they will.
The Cultural Resource Management Plan has to consider all the cultural resources. So, as far as Ojibwe connections in a broad sense to the island, all that has to be factored in. And the Grand Portage Band in particular is in contact with Isle Royal, and they have certain rights as a federally recognized tribe to respond to the plan, in addition to being just as an individual, if they care to do that.
In the future, it is uncertain how the Park Service will decide to manage the human history of Isle Royal National Park. However, it is certain that the history of those who have lived and worked on the island is important to preserve. Al Hunter.
In order for it to be fully appreciated, the history of Native peoples has to be part of it. And Native communities around the Great Lakes have to be part of it. We haven't gone anywhere. We're still here. If people care about the island, if people care about the history, if people care about making sure that the stories are known and that new stories are created, it doesn't matter who they are, if they're Anishinaabe or not Anishinaabe. That has to be done, you know.
Moments in Time is produced by the WTIP News Department. It's about sharing stories and memories from our region's past. Check out the series at WTIP.org.